Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. The Council of Europe is the continent's oldest political body, dating back to 1949, and it aims to uphold human rights, democratic norms, and the rule of law. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe is sometimes called the driving force of the whole organisation, bringing together parliamentary delegations from 46 member states, and it has observer states as well. Well, my guest is the president of the assembly, Theodoros Roussopoulos. He's a Greek politician from the conservative New Democracy Party and a former minister of state and a former spokesperson for the Greek government as well. Welcome to Talking Europe.
Thank you, dear Armin.
So, on the democratic backsliding, which is something that your organization has repeatedly warned about. Actually, the 2025 report for the Council Secretariat says that democratic values are under attack. You've echoed this, saying that serious politicians are losing to populists. What do you mean by that?
Okay, let me tell you this. There is a survey, a recent one, that gives us this worrying information that the Generation Z do not trust democracy anymore. And it's like 32% in Europe, 52% in UK of the Generation Z people believe that the Prime Minister should not give a damn on the assembly, on the parliament. So this is very worrying. Why does it happen? Because people had lost the trust to politicians, and they had lost the trust to institutions, to journalism as well. I can speak as a former journalist too. You know, the problem is that politicians are keen of flattering the people. So it is a two-sided problem. It's not only the people that they have lost the trust of the politicians, but the politicians who try to be very close to the people in the wrong way. We have to speak the truth to the people. We have to say less during our pre-election periods, and then maybe we will gain this credibility that it is now lost for at least 10 or 20 years.
Is parliamentary diplomacy a tool then to try to do something about this, and if so, how?
Though I would like to say it is, but not as much important as I would like to. But the parliament should show that they are there for democracy, not only in theory, but in practice. If we are closer to the people and we try to explain to them the problems and how we solve them. Everything is complicated. Let's take decisions taken by our assembly or by the European Parliament. It is like reading, in many cases, very complicated legal texts. Mm. So we need to make it simple. Mm. Allow me to say that I had this idea last year when I was elected, and I asked my colleagues, the ITs of the Council of Europe, to make a program, and they did so people can enter our website and find immediately all these reports that we have decided the last 75 years in a language which is understandable to everybody. So if we make it simple, but not all things are easy to make it simple because life is very complicated, then this is one step. And the best step, the most important, is what I just mentioned. We need to speak the truth to the people and to not create the illusion that everything is easy to be solved. Dear Armen, it is not Hollywood. Yeah. Real life is cruel.
So, yeah, better communication by parliamentarians with people, with social media users. I get all that. But I want to talk a little bit also about how you can uphold your own standards, because this backsliding that we've seen, it's happening within Council of Europe member states, and it's not just the usual suspects like Turkey, for example. Just recently, Denmark was told that it has to do more to act on corruption safeguards. That's not a country you'd associate with these kinds of problems. So what instruments do you actually have? Is it just this high-level dialogue between countries and parliaments? Is it legally binding instruments? What is it exactly?
Yes, before I was elected as a president, I was a president of the Migration Committee for 2 years. Believe me, as a Greek, I heard a lot of issues about pushbacks in the Aegean, etc. I didn't feel well. But though I didn't feel well, I felt that in cases it was the truth and I had to face it. So I went to my parliament, I went to my government and spoke openly on that. If the parliamentarians in the assembly go back to their countries and speak openly to their governments, then we might have two results. The one is being heard more than ever. And the second is make the Council of Europe work more visible. because people are being confused between the Council of Europe and the European Union. But what we are doing, as you mentioned in the beginning, it is human rights, democracy, and the rule of law, and this is important for us to work the way that I have told you.
But to be clear,
it doesn't matter if it is Greece or Denmark or it is Azerbaijan or Turkey, it is violations that might happen in any country.
Yeah, but to be clear, so beyond political dialogue, you don't have binding instruments, but the European Court of Human Rights, which is basically the legal arm of the Council of Europe, it can issue binding rulings, but there has to be compliance. And, of course, member states don't always comply, as we know.
Yeah, there are many, many countries that do not follow the decisions taken by the Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, which is a famous institution, a body related to us, because the assembly that I have the honor to preside is electing the judges of this court. Let me give you an example. For Azerbaijan, it was January 2024. The assembly decided that we are going to challenge the credentials of the Azeri delegation. That means that we put a strict rule there, and we said, if you don't change your behavior, if you do not release political prisoners, as Mr. Aliyev is doing, then you cannot belong to this assembly. Of course, they have stayed at the Committee of Ministers, meaning they are in the organization. On the other hand, it is Georgia, for example, that we have decided this January that we are going to ratify their credentials. They didn't like the idea that we asked them to do more. If you want to be a member of a family, of the biggest political family, which you mentioned, it is really the biggest political family with 46 member states, then you have to fulfill the criteria.
So you're going to ratify the credentials of the Georgian delegation?
We have already done so.
But at the same time, there's been a verdict against the pro-Western protesters in Georgia.
At the same time, the Prime Minister, Mr. Kobahidze, decided not to follow, not to attend the assembly, and he said, we don't care about the assembly. This is the most dangerous, because if member states are being allowed in what I call cherry-picking, I stay at the Committee of Ministers, meaning the Ministers of Foreign Affairs and the ambassadors, but I don't want to be in the assembly. The next step is that they will not follow the decisions taken by the Human Rights Court. So do we have to reconsider? Not our principles. Our principles have been there for a long time, have been written by figures, political figures, bigger than history, as I say. It was Winston Churchill, it was Charles de Gaulle, it was Adenauer that they created this big organization. So we need to consider. The most important, in my opinion, is that populism is going to prevail, is prevailing, and these authoritarian regimes, because we have authoritarian regimes as member states of the Council of Europe, believe that they can do everything with the power of ammunition or money.
Speaking of cherry-picking, the United Kingdom has, of course, been accused of cherry-picking European rules in the past, and there's still a debate in that country going on about will it stay in the European Convention on Human Rights, which is marking its 75th anniversary this year, actually. There are growing calls for the UK to leave the convention over the whole migration issue. Do you think that's likely, and would that set a precedent maybe for other countries to reconsider their participation?
It is very
well.
Important that you point out the UK. First of all, because there are different opinions in UK. I know that the Tories, the Conservatives, believe that they might leave. The rest of the political administration, which is governing the country right now, is not in the same of the same opinion. The second is that if we take the cases which have been examined by the court, we will see that it is a small percent, like 5%, no more than 10% of situations which are related with immigration issues. I understand that there are some problems caused because of these decisions taken by the court, but on the other hand, if we do not respect the court's decision, then what is the message that we give to the internal judges? Because it's not only the judges in Strasbourg. The judges in Strasbourg are being elected by us, but the judge represent each country. And the message to the judges in UK, if a government or an opposition says that we do not respect the decisions taken in Strasbourg, how can they persuade the people to respect the decisions taken then in their own courts?
Yeah, important point. A couple of other countries that we need to mention, but we don't have a huge amount of time, unfortunately. I want to talk a bit about Ukraine and also Moldova. You've called, of course, for final steps to be taken for the establishment of an international tribunal when it comes to Ukraine. Just briefly, what are the latest? What's the latest situation on that?
The Claims Commission is the latest decision that we have taken. We have, of course, the registry of damage, so we know what is happening there. More than 15,000 people or organizations have appealed to this registry damage list. Now we have the Claims Commission, which is, as I said, a new treaty which will be decided soon in our Assembly. And it follows and complements, actually, the registry of damage, which I have mentioned. The next step is to ask for this money. How can we find this money back? Is it frozen assets of Russians in Europe? Is it another way? We will see. But it is very important to make the basis, to build the basis for the next step.
And I believe on Moldova pace, so the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe is planning to observe the Moldovan election at the end of September, which is, of course, very important for Europe. There's a lot at stake.
Thank you for mentioning. One of the crucial roles that we have in the Assembly is that we send observers, parliamentarians from all countries, to observe elections in countries which are under monitoring or in post-monitoring situation. And in Moldova, now we are going to make something new. It is the first organization globally that is going to observe the out-of-country voting. Because Moldovans have 15% of their voters living out of country. So we're trying to make this case study to see how is it happening, what is happening. And we all know that there is an interference from Russia in the Moldovan elections, which we recently had for the president.
And we remember how important the diaspora vote was in the Romanian election as well.
Exactly.
We'll have to stop there. Thank you so much for being my
guest.
Thank
you for having me.
Thank you. So that was Theodoros Roussos, the President of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. Glad you could join us here in this episode of Talking Europe.